There was another factor at work, which, well, we'll come to later, which had like a, had to do with a low market. Then it was around May, the end of May, right? That we started on the Arizona grape. Well, basically, on the Arizona grape, the same thing happened that happened here, I think. If anybody has any other like thoughts or explanations.
Marcia, didn't we get the last of the Bocelli gorge there?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Short season, too, right?
That's right.
Doesn't that have something to do with
here in April? Here in April, there were, let's see, there was Richard Glass Company, there was Oasis Gardens, there was Richard Peters, and Harry Carrier. Yeah. And they were the last of the non-union growers in Coachella Valley. And they were all very afraid of the boycott. Very afraid, because they got murdered last year, I mean the year before, in Coachella. And maybe they would have, or maybe they wouldn't have, this time around. But in any event, they were convinced that they were going to get hurt very badly. They signed. Carrion was the last guy, no, Richard Peters was the last guy to sign. He signed at the Bakersfield Airport, signed a contract, last guy for Coachella Valley. He and Carrion were having a competition to see who would sign last. But Carrion was forced to sign when his crew walked out the first day of the picking. And so that night, at midnight, he signed contract and going up. He also, he was a guy with the organic grapes. Right? Did you all hear about the organic grapes? If you know anybody who wants to buy organic grapes, Harry Carrion has organic grapes. Union organic grapes, yeah. Like he grows them without any chemicals or pesticides or anything. They look horrible. They look like, on Hunt's, if they came to Hunt's Point, you know, they said, what's this garbage? You know, just, but
he doesn't put a legal on his box, by the way. He doesn't put a label on his box.
I'm supposed to put a label on his box. But, you know, okay, so yeah, right in here, the Coachella Valley became 100% human. At the same time, we picked up some citrus contracts that just went into effect about 2 weeks ago with growers like Oasis Gardens, Richard Glass Company, and so forth, that are independents of Sun... That, well, see, Sunkist is, of course, the biggest citrus deal going in the West. And these guys are independent and have their own packing operations. And they were kind of hoping for a Sunkist boycott, so they all signed contracts at the same time. They were planning to put a little eagle on each grapefruit. They have a machine that that's Coachella Valley, and we're going to put a little black eagle on every single one. Get a premium for that grapefruit. See, nobody believes in a boycott like the Coachella Valley growers. I mean, it's really amazing. They really believe it. It's, you know. Yeah, well, no, this year, like talking to them, you know, you can hardly talk to them without them starting to talk about, God damn, that boycott really, you know, it was amazing what it did, and so on and so on and so on. See, because, and this is just kind of a sidelight, see, the grape market this year, and to some extent last year, but particularly this year, has been phenomenal. They haven't had a year like this year, the union grape growers. Well, nobody remembers when they had a year this good. Particularly Coachella Valley. And the reason is the boycott. That's the reason they attribute it to, the growers themselves. Because, see, two things happened. The boycott, the grape boycott, made everybody very conscious of grapes, number one. And, like, grapes were kind of a, you know, not too much of a big thing before the boycott. And, like, we really made grapes a big thing. And, of course, we stopped a lot of people from buying them, but we made people very much aware of them. So that, like, when the boycott was over, you were conscious of being able to buy grapes, which was, you know, that was number one. Number two was that during the boycott, we shut off a lot of, you know, major markets to the grape guys, like in Chicago and in Boston and New York, Philadelphia, and so forth. And so in order to sell their grapes, they had to create a demand and push them in small secondary areas, like the South and the Midwest, Texas, and so forth. areas that normally hadn't gotten that much grapes, because grapes aren't like lettuce. I mean, grapes are fairly, you know, you can do with them or without them. I mean, it's nothing like that. So they created kind of a whole second market. Then when the boycott ended, the terminals were opened up again, chain stores were opened up again, plus they had this whole second market that they created to fight the boycott. And so there's more demand for grapes than there ever was before. See? And the other thing is that some of the marginal guys, because of the increased cost, went out of business, so there's less grapes. I mean, they went to wine or raisins or something, so there's less table grapes. So there's less table grapes, and there's more demand, and like Coachella Valley was getting just incredible prices for their grapes this year, so we can go back and get a really good contract next time around, because they will have made a lot of money. Anyway, that on Coachella Valley. Then we have the Arizona, let's see, Arizona ran from when? The end of May till around July, right? Of course, in Arizona, we were hitting some of the same guys that we were hitting back here, which was Church, and did Bodine ship grapes this year?
Yeah.
Bodine,
Martori
Brothers, a lot of the same guys.
McCarthy and Southbound.
McCarthy and Southbound, yeah. That's an interesting corporation. Yeah, they bought several thousand acres in, and they're connected with this Bangor Punta company. You ever heard of that? Punta. They're the guys that make Smith and Wesson. They own, you know, the guns, and make mace, and make
Down with the guns.
Right. Boycott, get your local police department to join the boycott. Well, on the Arizona grapes, we have the same kind of thing here. I mean, in retrospect, that we were trying to, we would have had to cover many more cities than we were covering in order to really nail those guys. Plus the fact that they were also lettuce growers. And like, you know, that kind of complicated the situation, most of them. Then came Cube Line, right? No.
Cube Line came.
I left something out. When did the strawberries come?
Strawberries.
When were the strawberries?
Like early May. Dirty Desert.
They were in here?
No. March. The Dirty Desert.
They were in here?
Yeah.
That was Nature Ride. You remember when we called people about the moratorium, we said, well, there might be something on strawberries, there might be something on Palmasson, there might be something on Cube Line, there might be something on this, something on that. Like Susie was talking yesterday about like commitments, previous commitments, and like struggles that had taken place. And so it seemed like this would be an opportunity to fulfill some of those commitments and, you know, deal with those boycotts and those workers. Now, of course, in the strawberries, we had quite a strike last year in Salinas Valley. Those of you that were there remember the whole Watsonville thing with Nature Ride and Driscoll and all of that. And those companies started negotiating, and then they broke off negotiations. And so the thing was just, you know, sitting there. And of course, we couldn't do anything because we were involved in the lettuce boycott. So it looked like Nature Ride and Driscoll might be good ones to go after. But, one very big thing happened. We were all talking about Pick and Pack and how Pick and Pack was going to save the day, and you could buy Pick and Pack Union grapes and all that. And then the Pick and Pack grapes started arriving at the terminal markets, and they were junk.
No, not grapes, Mark.
I mean, strawberries. Sorry. The Pick and Pack strawberries started arriving, and the quality was just really lousy. And you all started calling and saying, here we are trying to get this guy to buy Pick and Pack strawberries, and they're no good. They're just, you know, they're rotten and all this. Well, that was part of the whole Pick and Pack problem. And the whole... Oh, sure. And Driscoll. See, these are very tightly controlled small farms. And, like, that was one of Pick and Pack... Well, Pick and Pack never looked that problem. I mean, there's no strawberry farm that even approached Pick and Pack in size of, you know, 1,000 acres. I mean, that's just unheard of in the strawberry. Like, most of the strawberry farms are very small. Very little deal, and they have very close attention. And in any event, that was the little foray into the strawberry thing here, which is rather short-lived. the Arizona grapes. Then we did Hubline. Is that the next thing?
How about melons? Was there a melon scare in there somewhere?
Was there a melon scare?
Oh,
that's right. Your body melon.
It was just a scare.
That was back up here. That was back up here. Your body scare. Okay. Were there any others?
Melon thing was like do we have a coit scare?
No.
What? No.
We had the thing with Almaden too, when they were born in those machines.
That was a little later on. That was a little scare. But then we still had a contract in effect with Almaden then, so that was a real scare. Well, that was like the little Fresh Pick scare. I mean, the little Green Valley Produce Purex little thing we did. But, okay, Arizona grapes. Oh, now we also had something else in here, which was the Coryville, right? Everybody? That's right. Well, the Coryville thing really started up around, well, it ended July 7th, so like it was in June and July. Now, Cube Line started when? When did our first stuff start?
The end of the 1st of June.
We started Cube Line. And what day did Cube Line sign?
August 18th.
Now, Cube Line was, of course, very protracted there for like 2.5 months because we built it up very, very gradually. We were starting on the, we still had some of the Arizona deals to go, and then we started on the Fresno grapes in August, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, juice grapes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, the second phase of the grape thing really lasted from August 1st until just the other day, right? I don't know if this is making sense. Cube Line, of course, was Cube Line was really hurt very badly, and that was very successful. And I mean, that's a single company, but that's a whole different proposition when we talk about single companies and produce, because they're the brand name and all that, the Playboy clubs and the whole business. Yeah.
You subsequently found out about the Boy Club, when something was taking off of Blizzard.
About shell space, yeah.
I was like a fool when I went into one liquor store. I didn't directly talk about it. I indirectly talked about it with the owner of the store. And picture I did from the store owner is that we replace it anytime you want.
But Cube Line can't get it replaced anytime they want. See, we don't know it exactly. See, it's somehow the liquor commission is involved. Various state liquor commissions are involved in seeing to it that everybody has a fair amount of shelf space. And so if a store owner wants to, a store owner wants to display Italian Swiss Colony, for example, why you can do that. But if he doesn't particularly want to display it, or if he has advantages in displaying somebody else's product, then a company goes to the Liquor Commission somehow to get shelf space. And what was happening, I know in California during the Hugh Blauen boycott, was that like Gallo was just following our people around. And I guess, Andrea, you said you were running into their guys all over the place. And like we'd go to the liquor store, and then they'd come to the liquor store and just boom, 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 boom. And every Italian Swiss Colony bottle that was off was a Gallo bottle on, which was great, and which really hurt Hugh Blauen a lot. But we have to find out exactly how that works. We don't know exactly what the law is there. Anyway, this was then the whole grape period. We talked about that yesterday. Did anybody have anything they wanted to add or ask or anything about what we talked about yesterday on what happened on the grapes?
Michael?
Yeah.
Someone raised a question about Hugh Blauen. Someone would like to get to the impression of Hugh Blauen, or somebody in Hugh Blauen was very convinced that the union and Gallo were together, getting together to screw Hugh Blauen. And somebody raised that question here yesterday. Do you remember?
Who raised the question?
Joe? Mariano? Something about Gallo and...
Damn, Marshall, I don't know. You know, they got the radar machines.
Well, let me, I'll tell you, you haven't asked, you didn't ask, I'll tell you what. Hugh Blauen, see,
Watson?
The other guys at the growers group that supply. They're like grape growers. You know that how the thing works, huh? They serve a market, and I like grape growers, about 16 grape growers through the cooperative. LI growers supply the wine, the grapes to United Vintners, which is owned by Hugh Blauen, and you know, that kind of, it's a very different thing. And we're putting the heat on Hugh Blauen to try and break LI growers. And there was this tremendous pressure because it wasn't really up to Hugh Blauen. Hugh Blauen exerted all kinds of pressure on LI growers, on the leadership of LI growers. Tremendous pressure with real infighting among themselves, trying to get the LI growers to bounce right. They never did really. But anyway, in the process, they were saying, "Well, Gallo does the same thing. How come the union's not after Gallo, and the union has a conflict with Gallo? It's almost the same thing. See, Gallo buys." Maybe, probably 60-80% of his grape is bought from non-union ranches. But we got the contract with Gallo way when we knew we were strong enough to demand from Gallo what we're demanding now from Hugh Blauen. So now, see, we forced Hugh Blauen to break new ground and to give us an agreement that, well, over the 3 years, next 3 years, he's going to have everybody that he buys the grapes from are going to become union members, the growers. It's a 3 year step, 3 steps in 3 years. In other words, what we did is we went around and said, all right, since Hugh Blauen were convinced could not break LI growers and force them to join, and since we had on the other hand tremendous pressure from the brewery and distillery workers and meaning and all that stuff. So the compromise was then to give Hugh Blauen a way to recognize the union. And instead, we're familiar with the contract, I guess. But anyway, so when we come back to Gallo, we're going to have to squeeze the same thing from Gallo we got from Hugh Blauen. And that's why we didn't, 2 years ago when we were getting a contract with Gallo, we felt that we weren't strong enough to do this, to do the piggyback that we did here. So that was coming up in the counterproposal.
That purchasing of union grape, is that actually a clause in the contract?
Yeah.
It's not done very much, by other unions.
Oh, no. No, this is the first time.
No, this is unfair.
This is the first time this has ever been done.
If we get legislation, brother, never let us get away with this. Here, we could never do that. That's blackmail, they say.
This is a fantastic, really fantastic kind of breakthrough and fantastic kind of precedent to establish. Not just for the wine industry, but for the whole processing industry. See, it's like taking a boycott right down to the first level, because that's really what it is. It's forcing this company to boycott non-union grapes in buying for its processing. That's exactly what it is.
That's why we couldn't get Palmas on the second contract.
It's amazing.
And this other non-union grapes, that's why they were stuck.
So when Hublein signed, they established a principle in wine that's going to, you know, encircle those Fresno guys and those Lodi guys when Assisi says we extend it to Gallo. Now, we've already got it extended to Almaden. And now with the Palmasson thing, it'll be extended to Palmasson. The other thing is here, that see, some of the major companies in agriculture, some of the, who are friends?
Oh, you know?
No.
Joe and Hi Bailey.
Hi.
Hi.
Jesus.
My wife and
how
kids.
You doing? Good to see you. I recognize you. The other thing is that in all of American agriculture, like there are certain companies that are really very, very dominant that don't have that many farm workers, like Green Giant and like, Libby's or like Stokely Van Camp. Del Monte has farm workers, but also, now see, this Hublein principle is going to be of tremendous importance when we come to those companies. And we boycott those processors in order to get the workers that work for all the growers that sell to these processors. So this was a great thing. Yeah.
I'm sorry, does the Newman-Song contract have that in it, or,
It's agreed to.
That is in the new contract.
It's agreed to. No, the new contract hasn't been signed yet.
What exactly is the situation now?
With Palmasson?
Yeah.
Well, you want to...
we have this attorney who deals with some of the, liquor companies. Who we first met in the first contract with Shenley. Sidney Korshak is his name. Sidney Korshak is known as one of the fixers in the industry. When there's spread labor problems in liquor, call Sidney. Except we couldn't get Hublein to call on him. We tried very hard. And when Sidney goes and we negotiate with Sidney, I do the negotiations because they're very pleasant negotiations. When we went to Finnerman, we negotiated for about 20 minutes with this guy, with Finnerman. And to give you an idea how it works, we walked in to negotiate with Finnerman, and Finnerman came in, and Sidney was there, and he brought in his attorney, Marshall
Davis.
And before that, Sidney Korshak had met with the attorneys and they had gone through the contract like a week before. And when he got back, Marshall Guest didn't like the contract, so he added a couple of other clauses. So we went back, we put the new contract that Marshall had prepared and not negotiated to an end. Marshall Davis, the attorney for Sidney, jumped out and said, but that's the contract. And Sidney says, Marshall, let's not run ahead to this. And then Marshall Davis wanted to go through all the contracts. And what about recognition? And then Sidney said, Marshall, I'll handle it. But what about the succession clause? Marshall, I handle it. He said, Caesar, what do you want? it's pretty hard to. Like a contract. And he said, okay. What else do you want? I said, like sign, and do it quick so I can get the hell out of here. And then Marshall Davis said, but there's two new clauses here. And he says, what new clauses? Well, here, this one. And Sidney says, look, Marshall, no problem. But Sidney, we didn't even talk about these. They're new. So Sidney looks at him and says, Caesar, is there two of these new clauses? And I said, it was really dirty fool. I said, yes. Okay, what are they? So what were the clauses?
What was it? May and shall on arbitration? And
yeah.
Was some little stuff.
So anyway, I said, I don't know. He said, what are they? So he said, okay, fine. We'll give them to you. You can have them. And David says, but he says, look, It's not, look, don't worry about the union. Don't worry about the union.
At one point he offered to give him his check back.
Yeah, he says, look, if you don't do something quiet, I'm going to give you a check back and you take care of the union. I'm not going to, you hired me to deal with the union, I'm dealing with the union. And my system, I didn't hire you to give the union the company away. So he just, for one, with Shenley, the same thing the first time, I didn't hear about negotiation. Does he represent Shenley? He's the guy that called me from San Francisco and I told him to go yourself. When he called, he said, I'm Sidney Korshak. I represent Chen. They got full authority. I want this problem settled. Call the boycott off. And I said, the hell with you. And I didn't know who the guy was. And he called me back, and I said, go screw yourself. I thought it was a guy, you know, anything about unions or... So I turned out to this guy, Sidney Korshak, who turns out to be, it's like, well, with his word is gold with him. When he called and he said, Caesar, I'm not representing... Paul Masson. He said, no, Siegmund. I said, thanks, God. He said, what? I said, oh, this is great. He says, what do you want? Contract. Oh, we got a contract. What else do you want? I said, do you want the Christian by the contract? And I said, yeah. I said, okay, wait just a moment. Marshall, do we get the Christian Brothers? And Marshall says, no, let's get the Paul Masson. It's better. Get the Armadan. So I said, Sidney, I want the Armadan contract. Okay, you got the Armadan contract. And so, fine. So, it's coming on Monday so we can make arrangements.
The grievances.
No, I didn't say grievances. I didn't say anything. No, not then.
The first, yeah.
I was very happy, you know. So, I hung up the phone. I ran over and I told them we're having a meeting with the budgets, I guess.
On budgets.
Budgets. But anyway, we're having a meeting on budgets. And I told the guys, hey, you know, what happened? So that's where they filed my book. Call them back because we've got... It's not only the contract, we got some grievances that settled there. And we got Vidal, which is the other company where we got beaten earlier this year. So I went and I called and said, Sidney, this is a little different. So why? Well, we got Paul Masson, but we also have this company, Vidal, which is the part of Sequence. Yeah? And I said, we got about 40 people that were fired, and we got a guy that was shot at and hit, wounded. And we got a suit against the company and you know, all these grievances. He says, what else have you got? I said, well, you know, thanks. You got it. You guys go through the work. You get your shoes, your grievances to settle. And I said, okay. And he says, now, you got everything? I said, yeah, I think so, yeah. Well, he says, now, make me look good, huh? Call the boycott off. I said, oh, yes, I'll do that. So we haven't got a contract. We don't have a contract, but Sidney Korshak, word is gold, you know. I mean, he's one of those guys that, we deal with it because when he tells us something, it's worse. So I have no problem with it. And we tried very hard to get him to take over Humeline, but we couldn't. We got the bishop, we got the FLCA, we got everybody because he comes in, he was what we want, but we couldn't. I think there's a company, St. Shanley and Sabrin, and I don't know who others. Sort of use him and other companies. He's like a fixer. When things go bad, both Sidney is going to get the things going on.
So do these contracts that we get with Seagram, do they run along the same lines as you run as far as mechanization?
They can't hear you.
Yeah.
Buying, forcing their crush to be a certain extent of union each year, paid political holidays.
Yeah. The whole thing.
See,
that's why the Humeline thing was so... I mean, we could only have gotten that kind of a contract through the boycott. I mean, after really hurting them. Because it wasn't just the purchase grape deal we got, but we got the political education fund, too, for the first time, which, like, is unheard of. Both of those things.
But we don't have... We have everything... The only thing we're not asking of, Paul Masson is being paid committee members. So see, they're not extended over a long period, over a very large period. The reason we didn't pay committeemen from Humeline was to sort of police, 1,600 little tiny drawers all over hell. But the other things we need.
Humeline went through a quiet phase, a quiet boycott, and I'm not sure I quite understand their whole strategy. Did you go through that?
Well, maybe we will when we get.